Hopefully your issue with Skype is not indicative of an issue elsewhere. I got a good deal today, Grant.
Excuse me, sorry. Yeah?
Yeah.
Good deal?
We were ordering a couple of things from Amazon Fresh. Or rather, this is what it was. I remember now. I was ordering Aaron some better masks. Some proper N95 masks, because she got COVID last week. Yeah. And so we're just having the things on hand just to be safe, whatever, whatever. So I was ordering those, and I was like, oh, is there anything else you need? And she's like, oh, well, I'm almost out of protein powder that I use for my smoothies. I said, cool, I'll order it. But to order it, it was like through Amazon Fresh, not Amazon proper, right? So it ended up being mm-hmm. these two separate transactions. And I was like, well, if I'm going to get this from Amazon Fresh, is there anything else on our running grocery list that I should just add on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are a couple of things. We need ketchup, we need soy sauce, and we needed olive oil. These were the things on our list. So soy sauce, ketchup, easy, always know what to do there. Olive oil, this is where it became interesting, right? Because yeah. all I care about, we mostly just use olive oil for like cooking things that we think are fancier, and so we shouldn't use vegetable oil. That's basically what it is, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the recipe calls for olive oil, but we're not like making dressings with it. It's not, the flavor profile yeah. is not necessary, so I always try and get the cheapest olive oil that I can,
mm-hmm. right?
And it turns out Amazon Fresh, of course, has its own brand. And so I got 2 quarts of olive oil for like $15.
Hmm.
Which, you know, I don't know what things are like around you. I honestly don't even remember what size but I normally get. But I feel like when I go to the grocery store, the cheapest olive oil I can typically find is closer to a quart for about $10. Somewhere between $8 and $10. Mm-hmm. So at least compared to everything oh, yeah. else.
Wow.
Because they also are nice, and in the app, they'll tell you, like, the cost per ounce. Mm-hmm. So everything else was hovering between $1.35 or $1.44 per ounce, more or less. And what I got was, I think, $1.12 per ounce.
Sick biggies.
So it's nice to get a good deal.
It's nice, yeah.
So I actually did the same thing going into the grocery store, our fancy grocery store, nonetheless. Over the weekend, that's all right, we had already talked about this in last week's episode, depending on how you want to count time, 2 days ago episode, that I had made chicken Jalfrezi, that ended up being spicier than anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that it calls for is smoked paprika, but it calls for a lot of it. Like, I think it asks for like a tablespoon, and I ended up only having like less than a half a tablespoon still left of this like small jar, which was all that the grocery store that I normally go to, the Safeway, all they have are these small jars that are pretty expensive. It's like a half sized spice jar for like $5 or something like that. It was pretty expensive. And so lots of times I don't even use all the smoked paprika that I'm supposed to because it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was at the other grocery store picking up a thing or two. I don't remember what I was getting, but I was getting peanut butter. And I ended up right by the spice aisle, which I'd never really perused there because I just sort of written it off as almost certainly a bad deal across everything because mm-hmm. most of the stuff in this grocery store is.
Yeah.
But sure enough, there was a full-sized bottle of smoked paprika for $6.
Heck!
And again, if just based on my memory, pretty good deal. So I was pleased.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Sounds like you were deal hunting.
I am deal hunting. And I still have, them in front of me so I don't forget, but I keep forgetting, is I have these 2 coupons for 10% off at Safeway because I got my flu shot and my COVID booster there the other month. And they give you 10% off coupons when you go do that at Safeway.
So you're Mr. Moneybags over here right now, saving all this money.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite. I feel like people who are Mr. Moneybags do not go hunting for deals, you know?
I don't know.
But yeah, no,
Mr. Moneybags because of the deals.
I do. I'm not like a big deal hunter person. I often have to consciously think about it. Like, I have to think, like, oh, I'm going to go to Safeway. I should go into the app and look through what are my rewards or what, like, are there any deals and coupons that I should clip and all this sort of stuff. I have to consciously do that.
Mm-hmm.
And typically that means that I'm I'm pleasantly surprised. It's like, oh, I have enough rewards built up that I can get a free pound of butter. Which, especially given that butter prices keep increasing around here, and the free pound is still a free pound, well, hey, why not?
Hold that. That's like an investment, heck.
It is. It is indeed. So, yes. Deal hunting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, being you, not to change the subject or anything, but being you already pulled the curtain back on our production schedule.
Production schedule. I like that.
I figure I can give you the 2-day update on my purchase of what are they called? Immersion blender?
Yes.
Or immersion mixer, whatever thing.
Immersion blender.
For tea making purposes.
I love it.
Freaking awesome.
Good.
Works wonderfully as long as I don't start with too much liquid in the cup.
So that is a key thing, yes.
Because I thought I was leaving a lot of headroom. Mm-hmm. Turns out you need to leave more headroom than I think.
Well, have you ever used one of those like small handheld milk frothers?
I haven't, but I have a free coupon for one and I don't really want it.
I think they're cute. They're fun. They're actually pretty good for mixing small amounts of eggs.
Oh!
Like, they are good for certain things. I use it for mixing hot chocolate. Like, there's a lot. But it's the same concept of, like, the first time I used one and I didn't recognize that, like, when you do this, you are, like, dispersing liquid from the middle so it wants to shoot up the edges. And an immersion blender is that, but on steroids.
Yeah.
At least, yeah. Especially when you're using it with tea. When I use it to, you know, puree soft carrots, that's not as much of a problem. The carrots are not... they are viscous enough that they're staying mostly where they are. They are just getting ground up into a pulp. But yeah, with tea, I could imagine it would be a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, water's already pretty low viscosity, and then hot water's even lower. Yeah. So.
And do you have, like, the at least the one that we got, I think it comes with a cup that is, like, designed to be used as the cup that you blend things in?
It does come with that.
Okay.
I'm trying, just for simplicity, I'm trying in like the normal, like thermos or whatever that I bring with.
I never use that cup. Name. I was just going to point out that would give you a good indication. Presumably there's some sort of fill line on there or something. And that would give you a pretty good idea of like your limits close, there.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give it a peek. I'm not sure. I didn't look that close. It definitely has lines on it. I have no idea what they were.
I mean, I haven't looked either. This is just pure guessing. But
that would be far too logical for this product, though, Mark.
Is yours a one that you have to plug in, or is it battery powered?
Mine's I have to plug in.
Okay. Yeah.
I was not certain enough that I was going to like it or enjoy it enough to splurge for a battery operated one.
Yeah, that was our thing. We've had a plug-in one for quite a while, and then for a wedding gift, we got a battery-powered one.
Mm.
And it actually is an even better upgrade, which is that the plug-in one that we had, it was very difficult. It was difficult for me to use it one-handed. It was almost impossible for Aaron to use one-handed, the way that the like lock and like go buttons were, so to speak. Because you always have to press two buttons to make it work.
Oh,
does yours not like that? Do you just have to press a single button?
Mine does not have that high quality of safety feature.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, ours has like a button that is like the safety button. Like you have to hold down on that for sure. And then only then can you activate the actual button.
Interesting.
So that gives you an idea, right? So it was difficult for us to use one-handed. The new one, the buttons are in a better spot that they can be used one-handed by both of us pretty comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
Now that you've mentioned that, I'm rethinking the... Because one of the things I was going to say is, like, my one gripe about it is that... Or one of my very few gripes is that, like, the on button is, like, kind of really hard to press. Mm. Or, like... And I'm now wondering, is that a safety... Because, like, you could not accidentally press the on button.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be very deliberate to the point where I think, like, somebody with, like, enough mobility issues would, like, struggle to press... Or, like, someone with, like, not... good grips, like an older person or something who maybe couldn't grip things might struggle to get it pressed very well, but Now I'm thinking that's a safety feature and not a bug, actually. I kind of am less upset about that now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to be. I would have to imagine. I mean, when it's a plug-in, it's less of an issue overall. Like, it would be real bad if a battery-operated one could be depressed with any sort of ease. But still, yeah, I would have to assume that that was a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. So, overall, I'm thrilled with it. And I think I'm thrilled with it for the use I bought it for, which I think is enough to make me happy overall.
Hmm. That's good.
But I'm also noticing that, like, I don't own a blender of any sort.
Right.
And I kind of have no desire to own a blender, but I do have situations, I'd say, probably around, like, once a month where I have an idea of, like, oh, I'd like to make this, but I need, like, a blendery thing to make it. And, like, a food processor isn't going to cut. Like, it's not... That's not the type of deal that I want to do this job. And I feel like this is going to, like, perfectly bridge that gap to give me, like, something to, like, halfway do it correctly-ish when I have those ideas without having to own a blender.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm quite anti-blender.
Yeah, I mean, we have one. I actually just recently, effectively as a birthday present of sort, I got Erin a blender. Because she's been using for a long time, she's had the Ninja, like, more or less single serving kind where you have to, like, push it down and hold it.
The magic bullet style.
Yeah, exactly. And I think at one point in college, she had one that was, like, a slightly higher end version, but it was still only single serving, but it did have buttons that you could press. But we finally decided to upgrade her because she had been wanting a, like, Vitamix, but no one sprung for that for the wedding. And I wasn't about to do that because I don't have that kind of money right now. We did get her a nicer Ninja blender that looks like a proper blender and has the different buttons and everything. Mm-hmm. And her issue is that all she does is make smoothies, like the kind where you have like chunks of ice and stuff.
Yeah.
And she makes these big chunky smoothies and that's all it's ever used for. And she eventually burns out every motor within like a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like, it's a waste. You shouldn't be doing that, you know? And so we got one that is more powerful. Hopefully it'll last a lot longer. But also, because it's a blender, it can be used for more things. But overall, I agree with you that these days, a blender is kind of a specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as you're not using chunks of ice, you probably don't even need a blender for what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Between food processors and then like an immersion, like we could use an immersion blender to make like a milkshake and probably do a very good job.
Stuff like
and
that.
Then you don't have
perfect.
To dirty up a blender. Like that's my big thing. It's like you just have like so many things with the blender to then clean.
That's 90% of my anti-blenderness. Mm-hmm. It's mostly just like, I like what you said where it's like a specific thing and it's good for a specific task. And so like if you do that task often, like making smoothies, it's exactly what you want and it's perfect for that. But like I don't make smoothies, so like I have no need for a blender.
Yep. Yeah, the only other potential benefit is like the you can make more at a time.
Yeah.
Like that's the other main benefit, but again, that's still a little specific. You know, and I would agree, I never had a blender when I was living on my own, and it never even occurred to me to get a blender. So, love it.
Yeah. Trying to think of any other updates from last episode, but I don't think there's many other updatable things.
I haven't edited it yet, so I can't yet remember everything that we talked about.
Yeah, I'm having to really use my brainy brain.
Yeah.
But... Oh, not an update, but...
new information.
Stupid thing that I've done since the last time. Stupid, and I'm still on the fence with deciding how gross it is.
okay.
Or do I want to go... we'll go this way. Whatever. So, this evening we had some delays because I had to go run out and go grocery shopping quick because I totally forgot that I had meant to go grocery shopping on Sunday or on Saturday night, and I didn't do that. And then Sunday night, and then I didn't do that. And then Monday night, and then I didn't do that. And so I was like kind of getting towards the sketchy place where it's like I don't really know what to eat tomorrow. Like I certainly have food, but it's just like none of it like I'd have to be very creative to make it go together like in a cohesive way.
Have you seen the College Humor sketch from, it's many years old now, but it's called, That's Technically a Meal.
No, I haven't.
Well, we'll have to watch it after this. It's very funny, but that's what this reminds me of.
Oh, that's nice. And there we have it. This is our dish. This is spaghetti. This is hot sauce, hot ketchup, egg spaghetti. Hot ketchup, egg spaghetti. I'm going to check real quick that I don't have a coupon on Postmates. And I don't. There you go. And that's technically a meal. Ugh, the eggs were bad.
Okay. Yeah, so I had to go grocery shopping. But the complicating factor here is we just had our first, like, significant snowfall of the year. Or, our first snowfall of the year. And so my car was parked outside, so I, like, quickly scraped it off because I was running behind and everything. Went and got groceries. And, like, it's right around that freezing point where it's, like, I think the air temperature is technically barely above it, but it was, like, cold enough that I still had snow on my car.
Yep.
From the, like, half an inch of snow that we got today that melted throughout the day on the ground, at least. But on my car, it was still there, so I kind of scraped off the bulk of it. But then, like, as I went to get groceries and then came back in that time, like, the snow on my car had gotten very melty. But there was still definitely, like, now sticky snow stuck on my car. So I was like, I'm going to take the time because it's probably going to get below freezing tonight. So I don't, like, freeze doors shut and, like, windows shut. I don't know. I'm going to, like, just, like, scrape the rest of the snow off my car. So I did that, and I was like, hey, I'm going to put my nice snow brush in my car. And I was, like, about to put it in there, and I noticed there was, like, some chunks of wet snow stuck in the brush. And so I, like, kind of shook those off. And then I was, like, looking at it. And you know how, like, if you just, like, run your, like, finger through a comb with water in or something, it'll, like, get out?
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, oh, like, there's still water in here. It'll still freeze in my car if it gets cold overnight. So I'm just going to, like, run my thumb across it quick to get rid of the water. Well, I wasn't really thinking about the fact that I was looking at it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it was one of those things that you do it and you're like, how am I so stupid that I just did that?
Yeah.
Like, and you just have to stand there for a second of, like, what the bajingus, holy shy buckets, that was not an intelligent move. Because I just, like, sprayed myself with, like, road crud is how I was thinking about it. And I was like, I don't like this.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
So I came inside and washed my glasses and splashed water on my face. And that was a contributing to the factor to my still lateness after delays. Because I went and washed my face.
That's funny.
Thankfully, my mouth wasn't completely open.
That's good, at least.
Because I feel like the level of stupidity involved in this action could have led to that, but Thankfully it didn't. It led to me being home free eventually by Tom Toro. The name of the comic is Home Free, not Home Free Eventually.
Grant, I'm your first.
Oh, fudge cakes, am I?
Yep.
Oh, I was so good, though.
Spoilers for the future comic. Grant brought Calvin and Hobbes by Bill Watterson.
Can we just, like, edit that in later on and then, like...
No, not at all.
That's too much work, I guess.
And we have a classic wagon comic where Hobbes is initially pushing Calvin very forcefully down a hill as Calvin yells, "Blast off!" Notably, there is a briefcase in the wagon as well that Hobbes is holding on to. Second frame, Hobbes has now successfully hopped into the back of the wagon, and he is saying, "Do you really think we'll get enough lift to break Earth's gravity?" And Calvin looks back, just, you know, scoffing at such a comment, saying, "Of course! You think I didn't plan this out? I thought of everything." And Hobbes, less certain, says, "Did you think of what you'll eat on our trip?" And we see them flying off of a jump near the bottom of a hill, very hastily put together. The fact that it did not break is miraculous. And Calvin is saying, "Packing was your job. Didn't you pack us any food?" And Hob says, I packed food for me. Gotta love it.
Do we want to talk about breaking things or blasting off?
You can talk about whatever you want, Grant. It's your comic.
So what I want to talk about is which of those two choices you choose.
God. This kind of conversation, huh? This is what we're doing?
Yes, and my friend.
I think I would like to talk about blasting off.
Okay. So this is more of a like 6 degrees of separation deal. Not that far, but not exactly blasting off. And this time I'm not going to fill you in on like exactly how it relates. But if I say you are boiling water and you encounter bumping, do you know what that is?
If I am boiling water and I encounter bumping, that is what you said?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Okay. Part of this is just like me learning, because you know those things like in your like technical profession where it's just stuff that you start assuming it's, or like you're so deep you forget that it's not like a concept that people know.
Mm-hmm.
Something I've encountered recently with this concept. So what when I say like bumping in the context of like boiling, it's like very violent boiling that occurs because of like a liquid getting extra hot and then like something causing it to like kind of a nucleation event or something causing it to start boiling. And so like because it was extra hot, it boils very violently.
Okay.
Like if you like microwave a cup of water in like a glass mug or like a really clean, pristine, brand new mug, often it's something that'll happen is like it'll heat up to its boiling point in the microwave a little bit above it. Because there's nothing to like start it boiling. Mm-hmm. And then if you like reach for the grab it out, it's enough of like a jolt to make it boil violently.
I have heard of this phenomenon. I have not heard of that name. There was some, I learned about this in a podcast because a podcaster was talking, it was actually CGP Gray, was talking about how this happened to him while microwaving a cup of coffee.
Okay.
That he pulled it out of the microwave and it immediately started boiling out of nowhere, splashed coffee everywhere. And the punchline of the story, which is the funniest part, is that he, enraged by what just happened, instinctively threw his mug against the wall and shattered it.
You know what? He just made some perfect boiling chips then to prevent this problem from happening in the future. And that sounds unfortunate and very frustrating.
I was trying to remember what he called it. He had some other name for it. So yeah, what you just said is not what I would have called it, but I don't know what I would call it.
It's not like superheated boiling or something. Something
like that. That sounds more like what he said.
Okay. Because like what it actually is like you're superheating the water. Like sure. Just like how you can like super cool a water bottle in the freezer if it's like really pure water and then you take it out and like smack the bottle and it all solidifies in front of you.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen that phenomenon too. It's like the same thing just in reverse.
Yes. So yeah, superheating is probably exactly what he said because that does sound familiar.
Yeah, so that's just, it's something that's come up in my life recently where I've had to kind of explain this concept to people without much background and the fact that, like, it's a thing that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And the, like, most, like, tangible real-world example of it, I feel like it's in a situation where, like, people could understand it, but enough people, like, either haven't experienced it or, like, if they experienced it, they didn't really think about it enough to remember it.
No.
So that people just like kind of look at you like you're crazy when you talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, I've never experienced it. I only know of it because of the podcast. And also because I've only heard about it in the context of microwaving liquids.
Interesting.
I also know how long to microwave like water to get it to exactly what I want.
Yeah.
And also we have an electric kettle now, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just one of those things that, like, it's something that is such a, I don't want to say, like, a constant part of my life, but, like.
You're just walking around like a superhero touching glasses and mugs as they explode.
Yeah, but it's not like, a constant part of my life, but it's something that I, like, from time to time think about.
Yeah.
And, like, am aware of. Because like I even encounter it like, because it doesn't necessarily have to be in a pristine, like, because often you think about it in a pristine container, like a nice, very smooth, like ceramic mug or something in the microwave.
Mm-hmm.
Or like in a chemistry context, people think of it in like a brand new beaker that doesn't have any scratches in it or anything.
Sure.
But I even see in like, I have an old like pot that I use on the stove to like boil pasta or something. And I even see it there where like this pot has like been effed up pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
So like it always starts to boil, but like if I stir it, then from like the track that my spoon runs across the bottom of the pot, like there are additional bubbles that come out there.
Hmm.
Because those are like kind of small areas where the water's being heated extra high or extra hot. And so like when I scrape, if the spoon like scrapes across the bottom of the pot, there's like a trail of bubbles that pop up.
So if that's what that, maybe I have experienced that. And because it's so uninteresting when it's in that matter, maybe I haven't really noticed or clocked it. That would be my guess. Because
mm-hmm.
like it does sound like something I would have experienced at some point.
Mm-hmm. It's not like the quintessential or like perfect example of the phenomenon, because normally the phenomenon, it doesn't matter which, I don't care. The thing that happens, like, it's in the context of like the fact that it's unsafe and like kind of a critically dangerous event.
Yeah.
And so like that's a scenario where I don't know if it actually counts because like it's not dangerous, and I feel like it's inherently talked about in the context of it being dangerous. But. Yeah, I don't know. So I was thinking about this, and what I actually was meaning to ask you about is, like, are there things in your life that you, like, wonder, am I, like, so deep that I, like, or that you've caught yourself, like, I'm so deep I forgot that this is, like, not something that people, like, readily understand? There certainly might not be, because I know you're a very conscientious individual who is well aware of himself and his surroundings, so.
I mean, I think there's stuff that comes up that I'm aware of it, but I'm aware of it because it comes up, I guess. So, various things such as, let's call them stereotypical responses to math education, or just math in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
That because I've spent plenty of time thinking about it and, you know, working with people and talking to people who also think about it, I'm well versed in like why people think that they don't like math and the experiences that lead to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And find myself just needing to not say that much when someone is like, oh, what do you do? And I tell them something that I do or about the company that I work for or whatever. You know, several years ago when it was like I was just finishing up college, it's like, oh yeah, I'm studying math. And someone's like, oh, I could never do that, or oh, I never really liked math, or oh, I liked math until blah, you know, stuff like that. But that's kind of the reverse in a sense. It would be like the equivalent as if someone, if you constantly heard people talking about like how impossible it could be to heat water up past its boiling point without it boiling, you know? And you're like, well, do I feel like getting into this right now? You know, do I feel like clarifying this misconception that they are just spouting because they just assume that everyone agrees, you know, or understands it? So that's more been my experience, is like that sort of stuff, or the joke of like, oh, you study math, here, do this quick math problem. And it's like, sorry, I'm not actually that fast at mental math. I'm going to disappoint you. So those are the things that immediately come to mind. Honestly, a lot of it is kind of the opposite of like, I almost lose touch of how much context I should give in the reverse way of like, I often am worried that I'm giving too much context to explain something. And that it's just making it even more boring than it already was going to be. So, yeah. I think that's where I'm at.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know, like, what do you, what is your, on my side of things, like, what is your approach to that sort of stuff if you're explaining to someone, like, what you do and what that means?
Oh, what's my approach to explaining what I do and what it means?
Like, do you try to keep it as concise as possible? And obviously, I know it's going to vary by situation. Like, there's a difference between you talking to, like, an uncle and, like, your barber, you know, but still.
Yeah. In general, keep it as concise as possible. As you said, it depends very much on the situation and my goals in the interaction. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm explaining, like, what I do and it's someone that, like, I don't really care, I explain, like, super duper surface level, like, very boring, don't even give enough details really for them to ask a question, mm-hmm. more or less level. But then if it's someone I know, I don't know, maybe this is going to sound really shallow and gives too much insight into how I interact with people. But like, if it's someone that I know and like, say it's like someone that I knew from like undergrad or something, and like, I don't want to sound like lame, so I'll give like the cliff notes in like the coolest way possible.
Sure.
Or like, that sounds like the most interesting or intriguing, or like I'm doing something that is like not pointless. Mm-hmm. But it's still like very much a elevator pitch. Like, I could have walked in an elevator and told someone all of this in the time before we got to whatever floor they're getting off on. And so I normally like do that, stop there. And then based on the response, I may or may not like give more detail. Because like if I get like a question or some response that hints to me like, oh, like they want to know more, then I'll like run very much significantly deeper into it in terms of like explaining like background concepts that need to be understood to like see like what I actually do and why I'm doing it, mm-hmm. I guess. But stuff like that, like kind of turning into like almost a 2-minute talk rather than an elevator pitch, stuff like that, I very much like look for, I don't say look for consent, but like look for encouragement from the listener that it's what they were wanting. And then I'll like provide that. But I think in general, it's like very like, how do you sell what you do in less than 10 seconds, mm-hmm. sort of, or like explain what you do in less than 10 or 15 seconds.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, like, often it, like, barely even gets to the point of, like, oh, I do chemistry.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting that you want to get there.
Like, it's, I think sometimes it's, like, it's implied, but if, like, someone doesn't know me and doesn't know what I do, I don't think they would necessarily know that I'm a chemist.
Hmm. Fascinating. I mean, I suppose that does make sense, though, in a certain way that, like, the last thing that I tend to explain about what I do is what I actually do.
Yeah.
Because, like, at least for me, the most interesting thing to me about what I do is what my company does.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't know about my company. Like, if I worked for a much more well-known company that people had at least a general idea of what they did, probably, then you kind of immediately have to start talking about what you do, or at least what part of the company you work with. But for me, it's like, no, I'd much rather talk about this is like what my company does. And then if I really have some extra time, here's the role that I play, because that's way less interesting than it used to be. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I noticed that because I think the question I get or thing I get asked more about rather than what I do now is like what I used to do.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And that's something that I've gotten a lot more comfortable and used to, like, explaining at different levels, because like some people just are like, oh, you used to like do something else, what? But that's like all they care about, and so like they get the 10 to 15 second talk. But then if someone wants to know more, like there are like fundamental facts that you need to understand for this to make any sense.
Yeah, of, like the things fact that you've been doing a podcast with your friend for like 4 years and
yeah and like there are things that just like people don't think about because it was kind of a job that is ever present in your life that you never that job's role in your life is ever present, but you never think about it.
Yeah.
And so trying to like give people that context in order to make what I did make more sense, I think.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But yeah, it's always like, it always depends on the audience. And like, maybe it's shallow, but like certainly there is some degree of like, how much do I want to impress them, or am I okay like boring someone?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know, I'm gonna keep rolling with this because I like the idea, because it's something that I first kind of realized when I was like first doing research as an undergrad, and I was taking a class and we were talking about like talking about your research and discussing your research. And so we had this project of like doing a 2-minute talk. So explain your research, but you only have 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of in that exercise of like starting from a certain place and then like editing and editing and editing and like practicing and practicing and practicing to getting it to kind of a final, more final-ish version, and noticing that in reality, if I'm going to give like a 2-minute talk about what I do, about a minute and 35 seconds, if I'm really lucky, or I guess 25 seconds of the 2 minutes, if I'm really lucky, is going to actually feel like I'm talking about my research.
Sure.
The other minute and 35 seconds, normally closer to a minute and 45 seconds, is going to be explaining background information and context so that someone is capable of understanding what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
or what I feel like I'm doing. And so, I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's like you always have to adapt to the audience because, like, you know, for example, there's a difference between a couple of, you know, situations that I've often found myself in. One is I'm sitting around with a group of, like, with Erin and a bunch of people from her program, and we all meet someone new at some place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're all chatting. And it's me and then a bunch of people who are all grad students. Right. And so that's just like, I'm the very R. much the odd one out. And I also can't do what they're doing, which is like, one of them talks a little bit more and the rest of them can basically be like, yeah, I'm also in that program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, if the person is interested and even knows what it means to be in a PhD program, then they could ask some more specific questions about their research interests or whatever. But even then, mm-hmm. they're probably getting a little into the weeds. So I have to try and also be extremely concise because of that.
Yeah.
Versus I went and played volleyball the other week, and normally I bring a different water bottle, but I happened to bring my water bottle that has my company logo on it.
Uh-huh.
And a guy was like, oh, Art of Problem Solving. And I was like, yeah, I work there. He's like, oh, really? I like took their classes in middle school.
What?
And then it's like, I mean, you know, I'm in San Francisco. It's not crazy that I would come across people who are incredibly smart and knew our program. You know, that's kind of what we do. But then all that to be said, it was much easier for me to, like, I don't have to explain anything.
That's kind of really, really cool.
I can just be like, oh, yeah, like, this has been my quick path through the company.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, that is nice. And so it's nice to be able to do that sort of thing. But even when it's like, explaining what my company does. The big divide with who I'm talking to is, do I ever say the word or the phrase math contest? Do I think that's going to be meaningful at all or worth explaining to the person I'm talking to?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it easier to just say, we work with like advanced kids who are really good at math?
Yeah.
You know? And not bother explaining, like, no, I mean, like, the kids who actually do competitions to show how good they are at math.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of a foreign concept to a lot of people. So.
You're right. It totally is, but maybe I was just conditioned knowing you.
I mean, I didn't really know that they existed until I was in high school, really.
No, I didn't either, but like now, because I have been through the experience of like learning that they existed, and then like I think you working at AOPS,
yeah,
and sharing to me about it, it was like, oh yeah, I just kind of like started to accept that this is a thing, but you're totally right. This is not a thing that people just like know.
No, and it's funny because it's like, you know, that whole thing is just a niche, but like even math contests are probably one of the biggest things inside the academic contest world. Like things like debate clubs or whatever are probably bigger, but I don't think there's like some international debate competition for, you know, high schoolers or whatever. There might be, I don't know. But I learned from my company that there's also, of course, like there's physics competitions and chemistry competitions, and there's like a linguistics competition. There's even a biology one. and all that is very fascinating to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
There is also computer science, but we don't currently have someone to help build that yet. So
we don't speak about them.
No, we do. We have programs, like training programs, for math, physics, and chemistry Olympiads. And then the Bio-Olympiad, we don't, like, run any courses, but they now run their contest on our site. Because during COVID, we, like, built a software platform online to run contests. Because we know how contests work, and we could build something for that pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say pretty easy. Obviously, it was a lot of work, but, like, we got it done in a few months, and it worked out pretty well.
You're the ones who knew most of the ins and outs of how they worked enough and had technical expertise enough to, like, get it done right.
And more importantly, had contacts with all of these different entities to be like, hey, what would you guys need to feel confident running this? Obviously, the first year, it was a little like, well, we're kind of just doing this casually. None of the contest results counted, really, because everyone's getting used to, like, not having proper proctoring and stuff like that. But eventually, like with the biology one, it remained online as far as I know, and I think we still host them. At least we did last year. But yeah, we have all the contacts to make that work. Anyway, all that to be said, everything that we're talking about now is entirely boring to anyone else in the same way that, like, someone who works at some, like, you know, quantitative finance firm, you know, like, I don't care, really. Like, you can tell me, and maybe there's interesting things that you could tell me about, but ultimately, I'm not that invested, and, you know, we can both agree that you can just keep the explanation pretty simple, and we'll probably both be happy.
Probably been happier if it was even more simple.
Maybe. We just talked about our mutual love of dogs or something like that.
Yeah. You know what else I'm happy, Mark? When I'm home free. Second Tries the Charm by Tom Toro. We got two kiddos in a bunk bed. We're going to keep it kind of short here. Two kiddos in a bunk bed. If you scroll down far enough to the floor, there is a hole in the floor, a sledgehammer flying up through that hole with a hand attached to it. The sledgehammer is hitting the dresser / nightstand and launching it to the side, revealing a Stretch Armstrong-like action figure. And both the kiddos in the bunk bed are kind of staring or looking over to the side at this hole in the floor that is being created by this sledgehammer flying up through the floor. And the one on the top bunk is saying, kind of excitedly, "At least the contractors are finding my toys."
Grant, do you have any stories, memories of toys that you misused or lost as a kid?
Ooh. I'm trying to think back. Misused, I know there's got to be stories there. I was a big fan of...
That is why I added that adjective, because it would be the easier one.
of misusing things, but I'm having a really hard time in the moment here, kind of grabbing onto one tangibly in a way that I could explain it. Like, I'm certain I've misused toys. I feel like that's kind of... I don't want to say my brand, but I think it's a useful skill that I gained in childhood and have carried on into adulthood, is like how to misuse things properly. I think it's a useful skill. If you want to talk about it some other time, we can talk about it then, because I got philosophy on this.
I'm sure you do.
But misused or lost, like, I can think of things that I lost, but I can't think of toys that I lost right now. I'm certain there were some, but, like, all the things I can think of losing is like losing like scarves and a glove. Like, it always happened to be something that was paired, so it was, like, very clear that I lost one of them in elementary school.
Sure.
I feel like gloves or, like, boots or something, or, like, boot liners, or I don't know. It always centers around the winter.
That makes
sense.
Weird
how that works.
It's a hectic season.
Yeah.
A lot of accessories to handle.
Especially for a scatterbrained little child.
Yes.
Scatterbrained little idiot. lovable, but still idiot nonetheless. Lovable idiot.
Yes.
Excellent.
Excellent.
I don't have anything specific. I'm sorry. That whole lovable idiot series of comments was my last ditch effort to buy time.
Well, I'll tell you the one that jumped to mind when I saw this one.
Hit me with it, Pops.
I'll tell you quickly. It was, I believe, my third birthday, and my parents got me this awesome t-shirt with a fighter jet on it, and it came as a package with a toy fighter jet, like a cast metal painted fighter jet, right? And it was super cool. I liked it. I was screwing around with it. We were out at a picnic area, you know, it's like a gazebo and all that sort of stuff to celebrate my birthday. And my older sister was like, "Hey, can I check out your fighter pilot or your fighter jet thing?" I was like, "Sure." And so she threw it into the air, and it landed on top of the gazebo area of the pavilion or whatever you want to call it, on the roof. You know, there's no getting it back. So I got very upset, and my mom went out and got another shirt so that I could get another fighter jet.
Aww.
So that is the one that has always stuck out to me.
That's kind of sweet.
And then sometime, I don't know, in the last 5 years probably, my sister's got me a RC helicopter from TJ Maxx or something like that for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We went outside to screw around with it because it was far too uncontrollable inside. So we went outside and I immediately accidentally flew it onto our roof.
Yeah, a few quick examples just hit me. They were all throwing balls onto the roof of the elementary school.
Yeah, you were always the punching bag of the playground when we were playing wall ball and you accidentally threw the ball onto the roof.
And if you were lucky, Jeff the janitor would be there that day and would hear about it and would go up and you'd suddenly see balls flying down from the roof, and then it was like Christmas.